Hey everyone, welcome back and thank you for being here. This is episode 3 in the HTA Zero series where we launch any kind of course. This is another one of the videos that goes for all courses. This is the video over the structure and course design and where to find things on both on my website and like what to expect in the workflow of class. When I've made videos like this in the past, I've used Canvas or D, and this time I have D2L at hand. In my 1304 class, we're using Canvas. So I'll, usually try to put links to specific videos. I mean, I don't like doing ev like an individual link in the modules for every video every week, or because there's like four or five videos or seven videos sometimes in a week. And they're all like when I have this thing. Oh, I forgot to even show you guys. The how it was coded. So I guess I can do that very quickly, because it's relevant to this discussion now. But even when I have this list generated right here in like 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, this is all form like through templating back on my end. It's not something I do manually, and episodes can overlap in multiple course designs with the way that I use Ruby and it compiles it. So I may have even covered it a little bit in one of the other videos about me, but I'll show you very briefly basically why it just makes like I'm one person. I need to do other things, so I if I This is like a much cleaner and simpler way to present the information. So whether it's like right now, for example, I teach at Ranger College, Lone Star College Montgomery, Tarleton State University, and the University of Houston downtown. I have email addresses at all four. I don't have classes at two of them this semester. I had classes at three of them last semester, and I wasn't teaching at LSC yet. I start that this semester, and then two of my other ones didn't have classes for me. I'm also teaching a dual credit student this semester, which is really cool. And so I think they're in person, but if they end up watching these videos, then hi. I assume we've met already. And anyway, all my students are really cool, and I enjoy meeting them and having new students. So basically, my website has most of what you need on it already. You can go to What it doesn't have is the blank readings, but those are in your files under your LMS. So whether it's Canvas or D2L, if you go to where the files are kept, and there should be links to these every week, what the assigned reading is and the exemplar teacher annotation. So you can see under annotations on the website, which is one of the top headings, annotations are when you mark in the margins of something. So you can see under annotations all the text that I've scanned and provided examples of. And so this is the first one we do in my Intro to Philosophy class in 1301. This is Bergson's Introduction to Metaphysics. And the video series that you saw, if we go to YouTube and look right here, so this is the playlist for all of the 1301 videos, which again, like this is something I would include in like the week one module and hope students to just follow along from this the whole time, instead of for me having to link individually like the unique URLs to each video and each a podcast episode. It's meant to be flexible, but I don't have to do all of the linking for you guys. I'm sure you can find it in the right places. Because I'm not tracking it. So yeah, there's seven episodes here. And if you go to these videos, and the playlist itself also has the guiding questions. So there are guiding questions for the first essay exam in my 1301 class. Basically, if there's only one assigned reading, I try to give the prompt beforehand, especially for this first exam. But most of the time, I don't give the prompts beforehand. And if there's more than one reading assigned in a unit, so let's say, for example, if we look at the, so we can look at what the actual components of the work are, but let's think about the units. There are readings assigned in each unit, and in 1301, for example, there's only one reading for the first unit. But in 1304, there are multiple readings of the first unit. So there are multiple prompts to choose from, and you don't receive those prompts before the exam. But in 1301, you do receive the prompt before the exam, and it may change for other classes that I teach. But for the rest of 1301, for units 2, 3, 4, and 5, you don't receive the prompts beforehand because there are multiple readings covered. Now, this doesn't mean that you need to cover all the readings in that unit. You would write one S for your essay exam, your timed essay exam. So, have 60 minutes to write 900 words. You should be prepared to do this beforehand. You should have thought about the philosopher extensively, read the text one or two times, use the guiding questions to kind of construct the main argument from that philosopher. Because whatever my prompt ends up being for you, it's always going to ask you to reiterate the main prompt. And then it might, in my higher level designs, the prompts may also ask you to reflect something further, but then you would be given more time beyond the 60 minutes to not only present the information, but also respond to it. Now, in the intro level courses, and in the 2000s, even still, there's only one paragraph where I want you to do that. So we'll look at the mechanics for everything in this video. We'll look at the big picture flow of how all the pieces connect. And then we'll also talk about expectations for what the essay should look like, what you should do when watching the lectures. Like, you could have the syllabus printed out with you in this video, because you can have the syllabus printed out with you during the syllabus quiz that is due this Sunday. You will not have digital access to any of the assigned readings. The syllabus quiz is not in lockdown. I just didn't think that was super necessary. I don't need to see you taking the syllabus quiz. There's multiple attempts. The last one is the one that it takes, and you have to repeat all the questions whenever you take it. So let's go up and look at that. So again, your essay is only going to be over one reading from the unit. And when there are more than one readings in the unit, you do not receive the essay prompt beforehand. You can use the guiding questions to help you build a picture or a sketch of the movements of that, 20 or 50 pages that are assigned. And then you'll repeat that in your own 3 pages of writing. That's what 900 words is 3 pages double spaced or 3 pages handwritten. So if you hand wrote 3 pages that you think explains the main argument of this assigned reading, and you've done it consistently with the lectures and consistently with the things I've signposted to you to show you, like, hey, don't misunderstand this. Hey, make sure you remember this. And I can see all these things in your writing. And you include a personal example in each paragraph, then you'll have a very well-structured essay with a clean introduction and conclusion, clearly kind of flowing from the primary reading that you've built an understanding of together during the lectures, where we read it all together and I break it down for you. And then you've annotated it and you've gone back and read it again. And then there's two components to your daily work. Okay. So all in all, we have some week one stuff, which is the icebreakers and the syllabus quiz. There's also an extra credit Respondus Practicum quiz that is due at week one, but it's not mandatory. All right, week one stuff. Don't miss that. Make sure you watch all five videos, the overview, the two about professors, about me, your professor. And again, that's my attempt to just show you that I'm a regular person and also then show you what philosophy can do and open your horizons. And hopefully I present myself as somebody that you want to learn from, because that's always necessary. I'm not this urgent in the other videos. I think in the videos throughout, like when I'm doing the reading and presenting the ideas, I really slow it down. I'm not just trying to rush through and like remember things. I'm not fighting for your attention. I'm really holding space for us to philosophize in those videos. But that's not what we're doing here, and I want to keep these short. So week one stuff, the icebreakers, which is your exit ticket. So exit tickets are down here in daily work. You have an exit ticket each week, and you have to submit your annotations each unit. Whether it's 1301, 1304, the readings differ, the guiding questions differ, and the guiding questions are the exit ticket questions. So you can pick one or two of them and respond in 2 to 5 sentences. If it's more than 5 sentences, I just have to set a boundary that that'll be a fail. So you get two attempts, pass, fail, and Well, yeah, we just have to have boundaries on these things. But like if I say 2 to 5 sentences, keep it within that, okay? I'm not as strict about that on the essay exams. If you can go as long as you want on the essay exams in that 60 minutes. You want to make sure that you have all the points covered. If that means like if you just write the introduction in the first paragraph and it's really long, then that's not going to be an A because you need to balance kind of your pacing better. But if you write 1500 words in 60 minutes somehow instead of 900 words and you've covered everything really thoroughly, then you're going to easily get a 100. So I don't have any caps on length. As long as you cover everything thoroughly, with a personal example, you don't need a direct quote. That's one of your questions on the syllabus quiz is what you need to include on your essay exams. Another question on your syllabus quiz is the workflow ordering. So like when you should print something out, when you should look at the guiding questions, when you should listen to lectures. So I'm going to cover both of those things in this video as well. Because as long as you're listening and trying, my intention is to be clear with you and direct. And to make it as transparent as possible and as manageable as possible. All the extra stuff, the scaffolds, the guiding questions, the exit tickets. Some of it's for AI integrity controls because there's no AI allowed in the class. Otherwise, it's just me trying to do what I think is best for your learning. So you have the syllabus quiz. There are 5 units in like 1301, but if 1304, there are 4 units. And so, like, it's 720 points instead of 750 points. If we go to teaching up here, like I said, you can use annotations to find any of them. But then in the individual episodes as well, so let's pull up 1304 syllabus. You can see that with this one, the daily work is worth, oh, I need to fix that. That's a typo. This should say 18%, 180 points. But, basically, I had to balance the daily work with the exams, whether it's 3 units, 5 units, 4 units. I'm going to keep those at 90%. So you might have 15% daily work and 75%. Like you have 75% essay exams and 50% daily work for 1301. And that's 90%, and the other 10% is week one launch. If I had 3 units, they would be 25% each, and it would still be 750 points and 150 points for 15%. And then I don't ever plan to really do any 2-unit courses. Even if we're doing one big book, there should be at least 3 exams. And I probably won't ever do any 6-unit courses because I can lump smaller books together if we're doing a faster pacing. But for the 4-unit ones, this is a typo. This should say 18% for daily work and 72% for essay exams. And the math actually comes out cleaner. It's 180 points each, and 180 is more cleanly divisible by like 85% for a B or 75% for a C. My bucketing is really basic. So again, you have weekly exit tickets, which are the guiding questions, which, for example, there are 10 guiding questions for Bergson or for like just, for that's about 2 weeks of work. And then Socrates is one lesson for like 4 episodes, the Apology, Plato's Apology. And that's 2 questions, 20 pages of reading. And then the Republic is 3, 4 questions for the first part, but that's like maybe like 50 pages. I don't remember how much. I think we read a lot of it together. And I think there's maybe like 5 hours in that one. I didn't read most of 6 and 7. And again, this is, for 1304, I want to make this not specific to 1301, but you can get the idea that there are a handful of questions, 3 to 10 per. That there are 2 lessons per week, usually 2 distinct readings. Maybe they're different chapters, or maybe they're the first and second parts of long chapters. Dewey, for example, goes We do three chapters of Dewey. The first chapter is one lesson, but chapter two is two lessons, and chapter three is two lessons. I think chapter three might be three lessons. I don't think I'm going to add another James reading, but if I decide to do that, no. I don't I'm that would be in 1301 specific content anyway. But basically the unit on American pragmatism as it currently stands is kind of relaxed in its pacing. It's a little bit slower than the earlier units, but that's not for this video. The point is the pacing of the units may vary. The number of readings may vary. Whether they are from the same author may vary. They should be thematically similar. So you can see in 1301, our units are intuitionism, ancient philosophy, modern philosophy, American pragmatism, and continental philosophy. Those are all 50 to 200 year periods. And they're kind of talking about the same things in conversation with each other. In 1304, it's organized differently, but you can still see that I've tried to bring different perspectives into conversation with each other and create a portfolio that is a survey, while also hitting on like a lot of important things that I think are meaningful. So you have the guiding questions, and those are used with the printed readings, and you'll use them to frame your reading, and then you'll do the reading with me in the lecture. You'll check it out again after we're done reading. Look at the guiding. So print out. So this is the answer to the workflow order. Print out the reading. Don't remember all the steps, but I'm going to try to. Print out the reading. I believe the next one is to preview the guiding questions, and then listen to the lectures. And you can have multiple attempts if one of these is wrong, but it should make sense. Print out the reading, preview the guiding questions, listen to the lectures, reread the reading, answer the exit ticket, and put that answer on this in the annotations so that you can bring it into your exam with you. And then scan the annotations to me, and then take the exam. I think really six and seven are interchangeable. There's no like that's not mandatory, but I think the scans need to be done. That they should be like finished before you should finish the scans before you take the exam. So you might as well submit them as well. And what that looks like, these annotation scans, is you need to have annotated two-thirds. You need to print out all the assigned readings for the unit. I need to annotate at least two-thirds of them. That means that you need to underline, write in the margins, print them out in such a way. Like if I go to this right here and click Control P, I can change certain settings. Like if I change to two per page, sometimes it gives me more margin, sometimes it doesn't. But let's look at this and we can change, like, yeah. So because I was doing Save as PDF, it wasn't giving margins. But when I'm going to use a printer, it has actual margins. These areas in the middle of the page where there's white space are where when you print the readings, you should make sure it prints to leave plenty of that. And you can see in my own work and my own exemplar annotations, I've tried to signpost important main ideas, important steps, important images or symbols. It does depend on the reading what I've signposted. Or how much I've done of it. So, and some of this is just like my own annotations from studying philosophy over the years as a student. Like a lot of these in the meditations, for example, I don't read these. I don't read the annotations. I read all of the primary source and lectures. I don't read my annotations to you, but you can follow along with them. You could use some of them if you want to. But they need to be handwritten. When you scan them back to me, it needs to be your unique things that you notice. It shouldn't be printed. And ideally, I'd like you to use multiple colors so that it's easy to see. You don't have to write as much as I do. When I was in high school and I would take math tests, I would use all of the available white space instead of scratch paper. And it was really hard to follow my work, but it was all there. And that's kind of how annotations are for me. I don't, sometimes they're useful for like finding things later. Sometimes they're just me trying to get thoughts down before I lose them. And other times they're me trying to remember important things from the text or signpost. There are lots of ways to annotate, highlight, underline, and writing in the margins. You can write answers to guiding questions. So, like on this white space right here, I wrote a connection between the third meditation and the three arguments for God's the three arguments for God's existence in the third meditation, and the analogy of the sun from earlier. And this is, just 1301, but it could be any text. I'm just using 1301 because I have it ready at hand, and it's really fleshed out very thoroughly, up to my standards. And 1304 is not fleshed out online asynchronous that way. It's something I'm still running in person and trying to build out with rigorous material. Anyway, so keep that in mind. This is not 1301 specific, but the examples here are from 1301. But in any course design, there should be assigned readings that you have blank versions of, and when possible, I will try to provide my own examples of annotations for them, because I want to do all the work that I expect you to do. And so far I've been able to keep up with that, but we'll see. And we'll always work together to figure that out. If I don't provide them for some reason and you think you expect them or you want them or you need them, reach out to me and I will be in earnest communication with you about whether I can do that right now. And obviously if I don't provide them to you, then there's a little bit lower standards on what you produce yourself, but you can still get a feeling. I may not need to do all the work in the annotations for material that I already know really well. It may be a lot of like basic level building for other students to do when I start reading new books, because I've noticed that I can read faster these days and I don't feel the need to like catch every sentence and annotate everything. I don't think I'm noticing less. I just think that I'm understanding things more easily. So maybe that's how some people read, a lot of people read, I don't know. But philosophy especially was very difficult for me, even me. And annotations help. So you'll print it out, you'll do the annotations for two-thirds of the assigned readings in the unit. And you can study the teacher exemplar annotations for further guidance. And then you'll scan these back to me. So whether it's Canvas or D2L, there should be some way to upload files. And I'll need you to upload pictures of 5 to 10 of the best pages from your assigned reading in that unit. Because I don't expect you to take pictures of 50 pages. I'm certainly not going to scroll through 50 pages, but the easier way for you to do that is to then record a video. So record a video. Let me see. These are the Emory. So for example, I'm about to do my 1304 annotations for Emerson. So here's an example of non-1301 content. It's blank right now. I've got room in the margins, and I'm going to go through and read it and write whatever I think is important and what I think would be helpful to students. When I annotate as a teacher, it's a little bit different than what I would annotate as a student, but it's pretty similar. So afterwards, I'll use my phone and take a video. If you don't have a phone, then you should have a webcam or something because you have to be on webcam to take your exams. You'll use Respondus Lockdown with a webcam and you'll be on camera when you take your exams. So use the webcam in the worst case scenario, but hopefully you have a phone that can take a video because that's how I would hope you take the pictures. And maybe there's an app that'll let you take scans and you can upload like one PDF with lots of pictures in it. It's a pretty useful technological ability to be able to manage, especially because you can do it for free if you just use the right stuff. But I want my course to be accessible, so if you just send me like JPEGs from the camera app, I'm not going to say no. Would prefer PDF. I'd really prefer a PDF for the whole thing, but that's a lot of scanning. I know from experience that's a lot of scanning. I use the Notes app on iPhone. I have an old iPhone, but it'll let you like it does some things weird. But you can play around with other apps that you think will let you scan well. But really, like, do a video and like if I was in person, what I would do is I would take your like when I taught this class in person and students did these annotations for in-person Blue Book exams. I've never done a Blue Book, but it's literally a blue small book with blank notebook paper that is just clean. You know that no students brought in paper from outside of class and used that instead. Anyway, in person, my students use Blue Books. But when they finished the exam, they'd bring up all their annotations, and I can't lug around. I had 150 students at the time, and there were maybe 150 pages in a unit or 100 pages in a unit. I can't lug around 15,000 pages, right? That's what 150 times 100 is. So I had to just like, as they turn in their exam, flip through and decide, yep, this is good. This is you've. So I'm not going to be like looking at every line. But I do need you to do the annotations. It's my way of kind of, I'll look at some of the stuff. That's what the pictures are for. You're not just going to submit the video. I need to see the video showing and do it better than this. You need to like show me like one page at a time. I need to be able to see most of the page. The color helps. Obviously, I'm not the not. You shouldn't have the entire page highlighted. That's useless. It should be some mix. Like if you look at my stuff, whenever I have a lot of things underlined, there's spacing in between and they're different observations that I'm noticing. And that's why some students may think the lectures are off are on tangents or off topic, but really there's just a lot to unpack in any reading. There's a lot to think about. And if you read really closely, you can find out all sorts of stuff from the author's worldview and other writing that they that there are beliefs that they have that they're not making explicit. And you have to read that carefully in philosophy. So again, please don't think that we're wasting time. So yeah, you should expect that I will give you my exemplar annotations, and then I need you to do the same for me to see that you've done it. And then you'll be on webcam to take a timed exam. And along with the weekly exit tickets, that's the full course design. So and then you'll also have, like I said, a practice respondus quiz. That's not, you don't do anything for that. You just like make sure that you know how to use respondus and can open it and then submit whatever's in there for me. D2L lets me put a template in there. So I'm actually able to put a template about what I hope you'll do for the structure. So let's make sure that we cover what expectations I have for the essay exams. But yeah. We have assigned readings and we have lectures. And those things, the lectures are on YouTube and on my website. They're also on most podcast platforms except Spotify, because I am boycotting Spotify, due to its relation to the military-industrial complex, which is about my views, on colonialism and controlling other people, which is also why I don't surveil your videos. So I'm a consistent thinker, and I'm not going to run a class with pedagogy that is contradictory to my beliefs about policing or colonialism or controlling other people elsewhere. I forgot why that came up. I'm so sorry. I know it was related. I'm getting hungry. So when I get hungry, I get confused. But yeah, print the readings. You'll have the lectures. You can access them wherever you want. They're not tracked. And then I think that will, and then like work through the reading, work through the guiding questions. Make sure you really know it in and out. Understand that you have 60 minutes for the essay exams. Understand how to scan 5 to 10 pages as images, and then the entire 2/3 of the unit that are annotated as a video, not as individual pictures, but flipping through like I showed you as a video. The way I'm doing it, for example, is just through Zoom. So if you have a webcam and you have Zoom, you can open up a meeting, hit record, and hold up your annotated pages to the camera and flip through them slowly and let me see. And then maybe it takes 5 to 10 minutes, but hopefully on mine, I should be able to like kind of speed scroll through it and see the preview. And yeah, do it as fast as you can. And again, the video is so that it's respectful of your time and it doesn't take too long. Or if you have a phone, I think that's easier because you can hold it like this and you can kind of flip through the pages more quickly. You know what I mean? So hopefully you can do it with a phone, but worst case scenario, do it with a Zoom webcam. So print the reading, preview the guiding questions after you've printed it, and then sit down somewhere and hop into the lectures, whether they're on YouTube or the various places. Oh, because I'm Spot. All right, that's why you can't find it on Spotify because I'm boycotting Spotify, and that's consistent with my teaching principles. So if you're like, I don't like Professor Hill's politics, it's not really politics. It's my ethics. It's my teaching principles. It's what I believe is right for how I relate to people. Nothing to do with a certain group or camp. It's just ethics, okay? So there are other things I boycott for ethical reasons, not because somebody told me to. If I'm being honest, I've noticed less like third-party integration with D2L than with Canvas. So I'm actually a fan of D2L because it's more like bare bones, focus on the work, focus on the reading, the content. And yeah, anyway. It's just a matter of ethics and pedagogy for me. So you can get it on YouTube. You can get it on a few different, it says it right here on podcast. They're all listed here. And as I keep recording things, they'll keep growing there. But you can get on Apple, Castbox, Good Pods, and Podcasts, Pocket Casts. Let me show you how this works actually, because it's pretty cool. So Apple, I have a, my code automatically, Apple knows the website on my UR or the URL on my website. It's feed. I think it's podcast slash feed, but it might be feed slash podcast. Anyway, whenever I upload a new episode, that file gets automatically updated with the new information. It just collects it for me. And so let me go over to this development environment and show you a little bit about that. Share there. So, like, this is the back end of what this episode looks like for me. So, I'll record the audio and the video. I'll upload the video to YouTube, and then I'll, this file is already uploaded to my website. It's what allowed you to see, the 1.4 under the weekly outline. And that's listed right here under 1301 and 1304. And then there's a snippet of code that creates a course list based on. I actually had to use AI's help with this because there were things that still weren't working and I was kind of confused by it. Coding is one of the places where AI is helpful. It uses a lot of water. It's really bad otherwise, and it's not good for philosophy, but there's like just kind of programming stuff that I didn't quite understand and isn't obvious without experience with these formats. So I'm grateful to that. I don't think I'll need it much more because I've got a lot of these systems set up. But it takes the key that I give it and creates and filters a list based solely on whether or not it says 1301. So like my intro videos all say 1301, 1304. They're listed for every course that I'll teach. But then 1.5, which or 0.5, which is the video for the 1301 overview, is only going to be listed on 1301. And so you could see that on the page, it was listed as week 1.5, but in it wouldn't show up on the other ones, and it'll show like 1304 will be 1.6 or week 1.6. Actually, I'll still have it as week 1.5, but it would be HTA 0.6 because I can edit those values independently. So I hope you can see like what I'm working with. This is all free. I pay $40 a year for the domain name. And then GitHub Pages hosts all of the files that compile into the website. And some of them are copy-pasted, some of them use templates. Here's the all the annotations that you saw. It's actually formatted like a bibliography. I can list it in a different style guide, like Chicago or MLA. So it's gonna be really useful when I'm writing my dissertation. And yeah. Oh, all of the episodes, so they should have links to the guiding questions. They should. So this is what it looks like on the back end. These, I guess I can zoom in so you can see better. These brackets mean that it'll pull a snippet of code from somewhere else and run a formula to replace that with HTML. And yeah, anyway, I'm just really happy with this whole system. It's super flexible, super useful. But also, hopefully, you can understand why class is structured the way that it is. So I include the guiding questions. I copy and paste them in and change the numbers to asterisks for bullets. And then as I continue to update the bibliography, it'll continue to pull references for new episodes with new annotations. And this include reference URL HTML is what allows. Let's switch back to the website now. I think I'm pretty much done showing you stuff in here. That's what allows the. So there's the bibliography citation that you saw it pull, the include reference, and then the include URL calls the hyperlink, but then it uses other templating kind of nifty workarounds to label it as the teacher exemplar annotations. And I think it just says, Hill-J teacher exemplar annotations for all of these. But that's where you're going to find the annotated reading. And so if you're not in one of my actual classes where I provide blank ones and there's an exam, then the open source version that I can provide to you is this annotated version. It should be linked in all of the podcast episodes, like on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else that it auto distributes. Oh, right. The reason I was showing you that. So, like, I add the audio file and I, create a copy paste that file with the guiding questions and the episode number and the key number for like the course. And it creates a new listing in under podcast. And as long as I give it, as long as I assign it to a course. Oh yeah, here's the Castbox player, which I just copy pasted the embed code. It's really helpful. And this is only for the podcast page for all of it. It's not, I can't create like a unique list. But what I like is that with that snippet of code and putting the assigning a filter to whether the episode belongs in a certain course design, and then assigning an order number within that filter allows me to create stable lists of self-hosted lectures. And that's very important to me, just for my values about why I teach and not expecting a payoff from it, and also wanting it to be stable, independent of any kind of employment. This is really consistent with Socrates at his death trial. They sentence him to death and then he dies. But he says that he never accepts money for teaching, so he can't be accused of corrupting the youth. Okay. So again, you can find all the blank readings under files in your LMS. That's D2L or Canvas or maybe Blackboard, maybe one day. I don't know what else I might use. And if for some reason I start hosting everything myself, then there would be a new tab, probably right here called Blanks, or maybe over here called Readings. But I don't have that yet. I don't plan on doing that. I don't have a need to yet. I will have to start hosting the audio files on an old laptop that's broken. The screen's broken, but I think I can use like run it as a server. And so what I would encourage you to do is to download. All right, so let's look at Introduction to Metaphysics, for example. You can see the citation and you can see the link to the exemplar annotations. And in this one, this is the only one where you have the essay prompt in with the guiding questions, but you see that as well as all the guiding questions. You can see how the guiding questions are kind of like unpacking the main prompt. The prompt is going to be one sentence. And if there are five guiding questions, then that one sentence for the prompt versus guiding questions, the prompt might have five bullet points or five items in a comma separated list. That associate with the guiding questions. So there's a pipeline between the guiding questions and the essay prompts. So while you don't receive them beforehand, seriously study them. You'll use them for the exit tickets. Write answers to them on your annotations because that's what you can bring into the exam with you. And then you'll have things prepared. You won't be as flustered, and you'll get better at it as the semester goes on. And if this is like your second course with me, then you're totally fine because you're used to it. But it's just a matter of practice. Now, what am I grading you for on these exams? I need to see, there's a lot of places where I just try to say this in the quiz itself online, in the directions for printed prompt sheets in person. Try to remember to say it again and again in announcements or in person or in this video. But there are a few different things. What I'm not worried about, let's start with that. I'm not worried about spelling. I need to be able to understand it, but if you make spelling errors, that's fine. I'm not worried about fancy or punchy language. I don't need you to tell me that philosophers have been debating this since the dawn of time. Avoid generic, vague things like that. What you should do in your intro, you should have an introduction, a body, and a conclusion. Your body should have all the structure, and your conclusion should have no new information. I normally find that it's easiest to write the body, conclusion, and then the introduction. Let me say that again. I normally start with the body because it's just the argument. Once I have an outline, and the prompt will basically give you an outline that you should follow verbatim. Because in the prompts, I recreate the structure of the primary source for you. All right. So write the body and then write the conclusion. In the conclusion, you should start by, okay, so in the body, each paragraph should be its own step in the argument, maybe its own bullet here. Right, each of these bullets would be a new paragraph with a new personal example for each one. Or if it's a comma-separated list on when I'm more concise. So for ancient philosophy, for example, there are, I think, six or seven, maybe five prompts for you to choose from because there are four assigned readings. Some readings have multiple prompts that you can choose, if I remember correctly. I think that's why there are more than four. There's at least one prompt associated with each reading in the unit. So you can prepare your favorite reading that's assigned, study it really well, and then pick a second and a third one to kind of like have as a backup. If for whatever reason you get into the essay exam and you go, oh, the things he listed in the prompt are not what I noticed in the text. And now that I'm reading the prompt, I realize I didn't understand the text and I didn't notice the right things. You see what I mean? I don't want that. So what you should do instead is study at least two texts really well when there are more than one assigned. And you should be prepared. You should have like a backup essay or two in your pocket. So maybe a third text too. And if you've done the annotations, you should be prepared for this. Okay. So yeah, the guiding question, scaffold and pipeline into the prompt. Your body, we're going over the expectations for how to write the essay. I think I do have something like that I can pull up to show you. Give me 1 second. Yes, here's a student template that I made. Oh, I'll need to export it as a PDF. Cool. So let's run through this. Because this is kind of what I'm talking about, but this is a concise list. This is the template that I put into D2L when it let me include it. And I would want to include this to like my in-person students too. So in the body, like we've been talking about, follow the prompt to discern the specific paragraphs unique to each argument, like I was saying. Include, I'm going to change that. I'm going to remove this. Include one quote from the primary source in each paragraph because this is not necessary on. Now, what you should really watch out for, this happens if you're using AI, and you shouldn't be, is that AI will quote things that aren't in the primary source. And I've read the primary sources a lot. I recognize when it quotes things that aren't in there. And then I control F on a searchable PDF and I don't find the thing it's quoting. And then I go, okay, they're using AI and they're quoting things from secondary sources, other authors, it's hallucinating. I've given AI my own papers and asked it questions, and it quoted me, but things I didn't say and didn't write in the papers. It's just, I don't use it. I don't touch it. It's scary how bad it is. It really is. So please don't use that. But you won't need to include quotes. I'm going to take that out of here, and it's in the template right now, so I'll take it out of the template too. I don't think it's anywhere else in my design. Do not use secondary sources, even by the same author. So, when we cover James's What Pragmatism Means, for example, one of the guiding questions is about justified religious belief. And I've had a lot of students cite generic things from a different primary source. And I'm not being mean. I know you don't have time to read The Will to Believe on top of reading the assigned primary source. Like, I know that the student did not read both of those things. So they should only be referencing, in What Pragmatism Means, which is the assigned reading from the syllabus in 1301. The last like seven or five or seven pages talk about justified religious belief versus it being a main topic in The Will to Believe. But The Will to Believe is not assigned. And I don't talk about it in the lecture series. And I think in the lecture series, I also emphasize, that you need to focus on the text at hand. But I consistently have students referencing secondary sources. So I have to be clear with you that referencing secondary sources is considered a failure. Like, if you're quoting terms, like, I think for James, it's serious, lived, and momentous is the criteria that he uses for when you're justified in believing something. But that's not the way he talks about it in What Pragmatism Means, which is what we're studying in the class. So I hope you can see, like, you just follow the lectures, you follow the readings. And then in the lectures, I cover all the readings with you. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be condescending, or it's just frustrating when students use AI because there's a very obvious way to work through the flow of the class. And that's why I'm making a video dedicated to it. What I need you to do, and this is why another one of the questions on the syllabus quiz, am I interested in dialectics or doctrine? Doctrine is like a sentence by sentence answer about what the truth is. The reason I don't have multiple choice quizzes in this class is because for a lot of philosophers, I don't really believe in doctrine. I don't think that they had one final answer that I could, and I don't think that's super important. What I do think is important is spending time reading, spending time thinking, and then being able to make larger picture coherent arguments. And so a dialectic is a movement back and forth. Bergson talks about dialectic, and we'll cover it, and then we cover it in 1301, we cover it again in Plato. Plato's the first, one of the first people, I think, if not the first, to talk about dialectic. Dialectic for Plato is the absolute wisdom beyond hypotheses and beyond. It's the thing that gets hold of first principles and then goes from the first principles to all the other things. It doesn't have to assume anything. It goes beyond language, and he says that the forms speak to, you're moving with the forms and using the forms to think about the other forms. And You've gone beyond language and beyond principles and beyond formality itself. So there's a flexibility to dialectics that doctrine does not have. Doctrine is at that subpar level of the divided line in Plato, and also is what Bergson would call analysis. And the students that I think have been frustrated with my course design in the past expect, are just like trying to get done with this as quickly as possible instead of just like hanging out. So you print out the readings, bring them to the lecture, sit down, turn the video on, turn the audio on. If you don't want to see the video, whatever. In the video, I try to show you what I'm doing and then show you other images where it's important and use gestures, humanize the experience for you as much as possible. But this should be, universal to some extent as well. What else in the essay exams? So I think the rest of these will be consistently true. So do not use secondary sources even by the same author. Include one personal example in each paragraph. Don't spend too long on each personal example and make it relevant and unique. So I'm expecting these to be like one sentence. I'd expect for like a paragraph to be 3 to 5 sentences for you to explain so and so's point, some implications of it, and examples they might use, how it connects to your own life and why it's important, and then go to the next step in the argument. You don't need to spend too long on each paragraph. You should move kind of quickly. Do not repeat main ideas in multiple paragraphs. Combine examples and claims as possible, and concisely follow the argument structure. So one thing that I've noticed sometimes is like that's why I say keep the example small, is sometimes students will have five long paragraphs and their topic for each one is actually really the same idea, and they could have put them together as expansions on the same idea. Like, a new sentence is not a new paragraph, a new idea, a new step in the argument, a new lit comma in the list, a new bullet in the list. There should be maybe 4 or 5 pages in between each step in the primary reading, right? And so you consider them beats or breaks. I did theater for a little while, and when you're reading a script, whether it's a director or an actor or a lighting designer or a sound designer, you look for the beats, which are the emotional changes. Or things where moments where things shift. And arguments have them too. And novels have them. Non-fiction texts of all sort have them. There's a structure to it. So we're looking for those beats, and those beats, those structural shifts, those moments where the text takes on a new point. Normally indicate a new paragraph, but you might need some connective tissue sometimes if they have like subpoints. And that's where sections can come in handy, but we don't really have sections in our format because it's so bare bones. It's just scrappy text box, 900 words, plain text, plain language. Just make the argument to me. It's pretty much what it is. Just make the argument to me in your own words, personal example, follow a clean structure, make sure you hit everything, don't use AI, spend time studying the text, the primary sources. That's it.
All right. Your body should be 600 words. Your total should be 900 words. I don't think it lets you see the word count in D2L, but in Canvas it sometimes does. And anyway, the way you open lockdown browser will be different depending on your LMS, so your learning management software. D2L opens lockdown for you, and you don't have to log in again. But Canvas does not open it for you. You have to log into Canvas each time. So when you open lockdown, it'll take you to the login page for your institution's Canvas, and you'll use your unique email every time to log in. Whereas for D2L, from what I've done in my when I tested it myself, it seems that students will, stay logged in automatically to D2L or log in using their saved password there, and then go to quizzes and then click open lockdown or something like that, and it'll kick open lockdown for you. You'll go to quizzes. If you don't have lockdown installed on your computer, it's something you have to install. If you don't have it installed, You'll go to quizzes and then try to take a quiz, and it'll say like you need lockdown, and it'll take you to the page where you can install it. I've also tried to include the link for you to download it, depending on the institution. But again, that's one of those things that changes from institution to institution. If I forgot it or if I messed it up somewhere, the easiest way is to go to the quiz itself, try to take it, and it'll automatically take you to the place where you download your institution's version of it. If you have it installed for more than one institution, then when you install the new one, you want to click like second institution or something like that. There's a way to have it for multiple places if you're doing part-time at different places, what have you. All right. In your body, your final body paragraph should develop the argument into a new context. And here I'm really looking for some kind of ethical context. If usually the things that we learn in class have some kind of implication for meta ethics or identity of subjectivity, whether it's about phenomenology or meditations on first philosophy or affect theory. Even in these things where we're talking about metaphysics and fundamental ontology, we're really setting up a ground for what we owe to each other and what the amount of ethics are. Same with Bergson. And so, in the last paragraph of your body, I'd like to hear from you a little bit about how we should live our lives differently with this in mind. And maybe one concrete thing you'll do or you'll change in your own life with learning what you've learned about this philosopher. How might you live better? Or live differently. If you are at your wit's end and you're already, being a great person, then that's fine. I'm not gonna, you should say something like that too, though. Tell me the ways you're already implementing it if you are. And that will be graded too. If you're not quite taking it as far ethically as I think you should, then I'm going to assume that you're really not getting it on a personal level. This is one of the things ChatGPT doesn't understand. It still takes all of my insights and makes them about a person. And consistently, what I've learned in philosophy is that the self is not a like individual thing. So if the student just still is not getting that from these ethical conclusions, it's not gonna quite make it for me. Okay, so be specific. And then in the conclusion, restate the thesis and restate the structure and the specific insights learned along the way. So, your structure statement, you should have it in your introduction and in your conclusion. A structure statement lists just like the prompt, basically. It's almost exactly what the prompt says, but for long prompts, you may need to make it shorter. Excuse me, sorry. But it should be like one sentence, and it should list separated either by commas or semicolons. And if you're going to use semicolons, you still have an and at the very last one. But in this essay, I will cover Aristotle's virtue ethics through looking at the specific good, eudaimonia, as different from specific pleasure. The mean, habit formation, activity and practice, and the three types of friendship. That's not the exact prompt I wrote for Aristotle for you guys, but if I'm thinking about virtue ethics just off the top of my head, that's what I would identify as the key ideas. So they'd be their own paragraph, you talk about them a little bit, and give some personal examples. And they would also constitute your structure statement. Any kind of specific insights you argue for or notice along the way from the philosopher, you'll restate those as well. We argued for X, Y, and Z based on A, B, C and D, whatever. And then if there are anything you assumed or questions you still are interested in that you don't think you covered fully because it was just, you didn't have time or it wasn't what so and so talked about, but it's related, you would list those here too. And this is true for any argumentative essay and any research paper in academia. You want to restate the position of whatever you're presenting. And in more complex works, you want to connect it with other thinking, but philosophy is already complicated enough to just do one at a time. Okay. And in the introduction, you are going to close, it's easiest to think backwards. You're going to close the introduction with that structure statement. And before that, you're going to write your thesis. So your thesis may be, and they may even be part of the same sentence. Your thesis might be, I argue that Aristotle's virtue ethics, or in this paper, I present Aristotle's virtue ethics. That's your thesis by covering XYZ, which is why I just, eudaimonia, habit, universal versus particular good. Right. And so that's your thesis statement and your structure statement all in one. And you want to try to get from random conversation you're opening up with your friend at the very beginning of the paper to that point. So that's why I say that it's easier to work backwards, because you're immediately from the beginning trying to give like a general context and then a more specific context. So you might say there are three main the ethical theories and philosophy: virtue ethics, deontology, and utilitarianism or consequentialism. Aristotle, along with Plato, was a major proponent of virtue ethics. In this paper, I will present Aristotle's virtue ethics. Notice I've by presenting eudaimonia as the harmony of balanced, diverse goods. And then you keep going through the list of the things you're going to talk about. And then each of those, like small, like eudaimonia as harmony of diverse goods, would be at the first paragraph. And then the mean would be the second paragraph. And like habit formation. And so I've thought through that process, and I've tried to create prompts that follow that intuitively. And so I've really tried to be well structured in this course. All right. So you'll funnel in a thesis and then a structure statement, and then it's your body. Each body paragraph should be its own step in the argument, part of your each step in your structure statement. This should also be a major move in the primary source. Maybe 3 pages, maybe half a page. It just depends on the primary source. Use personal examples in each paragraph. You do not need to use a direct quote. You do not need to use fancy language. You are not allowed to use AI. You should avoid using AI. You are not allowed to use secondary sources. You should avoid using secondary sources. You should expect to read each primary source at least once during the lectures with me, and but probably 2 or 3 times. If it doesn't make sense the first time, then you don't need to go somewhere else. You just need to read it again. It'll make sense the second and third time, I promise to you. If you're following the lectures, if you've got the guiding questions in hand, if you're going slowly with the sentences and underlining and rereading them as many times as you need to until they click, it will make sense. But that's just how philosophy goes, okay? And again, I'm not trying to be overly firm. It's just the way that we do the work. Okay. I'm studying Latin right now, and one of the phrases I use Duolingo. One of the phrases in Latin is that you have to translate between Latin and English is the book is not a student. And another one is the my book is my teacher. I think that's it's like Libris meus est magister meus, or Liber mea est magistra mea. I think I'm still fuzzy on the endings for gender and plurality for new words that I'm learning. I can't quite discern the pattern yet. I know a decent amount of Spanish. I think that's pretty much, so this is what I'm grading you on. And then maybe we should look at, there are these extra credit opportunities. There's about 12.5% extra credit in the course. They should be two short responses, one early in the semester, one late in the semester, about 1 to 2 pages a piece. One is usually pretty consistently, but it may change. So far, one is an interview with an old professor that I did for an online conference. And another one in 1301, it's an aesthetic critique after Dewey or using Dewey of something you like, and you have to explain how it functions in your own life. And then basically, I think I'm going to keep it to where this second one is a phenomenological critique. which means that you have to describe the phenomenology of the material thing and then explain how it functions. So in 1301, that's aesthetics, but in 1304, world religions, that is some kind of religious artifact. So you have to explain like its historical origination, what it looks like or what it sounds like, how it was used. In 1301, you might describe a dance or a church meeting for an aesthetic, or a synagogue meeting, or a temple, or a mosque with an imam. I'm a little fuzzy. Sorry, still in 1301. I'm still getting better at that one. Because I didn't really take any like world religions courses in philosophy. I took philosophy of religion, and then I just studied world religions on my own. But it's a fill course, and I have kind of open source materials. Anyway, if when the content changes, you can see that the assignment's kind of the same still. You're going to describe, like I said, the phenomena, what no matter what the medium is, and you're going to describe the impact and connect specific aspects of the phenomena to its impact and try to draw some broader conclusions about the necessary structure or nature of the experience or of the material production. And that's a genuine phenomenological work. Oh, I do take late work. It's like week 10 or week 11 for minus 30% off. It's usually towards the end of the second to last month of the semester. So like the end of March or the end of October, in spring and fall respectively. And then it's 50% off up to week 14 or 15. That's like the last week of the very last month, aside from finals. So the last week of April or the last week of November, where finals are usually the first week of May and the first week of December, maybe the second week of each. But I need everything turned in by then. There's enough room for like one small mistake, but there's not a lot of room for repeatedly missing exams by the deadline. They open on Mondays and they're due on Sundays. The modules open and close on a week-by-week basis too with the exit tickets. You will still have an exit ticket due on the week that you have an exam. You may or may not. Be sure to double check. I think, like, for example, with my 1304, with having 90 points here instead of 75 points, it worked out better mathematically that we didn't have an exit ticket on exam weeks, but I may be misremembering that. So just take a look to see, it should be in the modules because that one is something that I either get from you personally in person by hand, or there is an assignment inbox. It's not going to be with lockdown, just be a blank text box that you enter into. It's not going to be a file upload. It's not going to be turned in checked. But I try to learn my students' voices, and I try to, aside from just the integrity checks, like being on webcam, and aside from showing you the practices that will help you get to where I need you to do a good job on the material, to make a good argument, to be able to read really well and understand really well, even if that means you have to de dedicate a lot of time to it, you'll be in a position to approach difficult texts on your own in the future, which is very important to me. So yeah. You'll print the readings. Man, I hope there's nothing I'm forgetting here. I bump like an A is 895 points, a B is 795 to 894 points. So I bumped that 0.5%. There's 12.5% extra credit in most of my designs. Oh yeah, let's cover this. So your exit tickets are pass fail to attempts. Please try to submit those early in the week so that because it's still in that 1 week window. You don't get the second attempt the second week. And I can't guarantee that I'll always grade on consistent days. They will really try to grade on Wednesdays, the first one at least. Maybe Thursdays. So try to have your first pass done by Wednesday or Thursday. And I'll kind of skim it and be able to get a feel for if it's representative of studying or not. Again, I'm not looking for super precise or fancy answers. I can tell when there's a voice there. And so that's what I'm looking for, if that makes sense. And then the buckets are 100, 85, 75, 65, and 50. This is what I was saying about like the 18% exams versus the 15% exams. The actual points that they come out to, which is how I enter the grade. Those are more easily divided in 180 points anyway. So, but when there's five exams or three exams, we'll keep it at 750 points. And when there's four exams, it'll be 720 points or 180 each. So in A, still, there's no misunderstandings of key ideas for A's and B's. If you misunderstand key ideas, for example, citing the will to believe, a secondary source that's not assigned in the course, instead of what pragmatism means for 1301, for example, that's down here with AI use. That's secondary sources use. So that's a zero. That's just going to be a zero. Using secondary sources, using AI in any format, mostly determined by using secondary sources because I can't always tell otherwise, but I'm making it very, very clear here. I don't use them. It will be a zero. Otherwise, I'm checking for AI through your exit tickets to see that you're, just kind of casually answering them in your own voice with unique examples, and I'm getting to know you through that process, and then skimming your annotations at the end of each unit. And hopefully, if you're doing all of that, if you're scanning the annotations, there's no reason not for you to not do it the right way, and I think you would feel, I think students would feel silly if they were still using AI and then faking the annotations. And so I try to use the relationship building for integrity. But anyway, you need to understand the ideas themselves accurately to get at least a B. If, for example, you say that the third reason for doubt in Descartes' Meditations is the evil deceiver, which is what most people think it is. All the videos say it. It's a sloppy reading. I don't have sloppy readings in my course. Really try not to. And I hammer it in the lecture. So this is what I mean by saying that you're accountable for what I cover in the lecture. If I clarify something is a common misunderstanding, then misunderstanding it's going to put you in the C territory. And I don't want that. And that's why I make such a big deal out of it. It's not like I can change my standards for what the course is. These are my convictions about what is possible and what students should be capable of doing. But as long as you're following the other stuff, like the exit tickets, if you're passing the exit tickets and you're doing the annotations, you're probably automatically going to be in the B territory. If you're following the lectures and just listening, locking in, probably going to be in the B territory just from, the daily work is what I think gets you to success, gets you to the B. And then if you do it really cleanly and it's very organized and follows the structure very well, has all the personal examples. I mean, you should still have personal examples for a B range, but you're not going to get an A without personal examples. You're not going to get an A without a clean introduction and conclusion. You're not going to get an A for a short paper. There are lots of things I kind of take off letter grades for. And usually the way I think about it is, aside from these big buckets, things like missing key steps in the argument. Let's say that a student misses key steps in the argument, doesn't have a conclusion, and is missing most of their body. And let's say it's the first exam. I'm only going to count off one letter grade that's going to get a B, maybe a C. And if it's the second, third, fourth, fifth exam, it's going to get a C or a D. There's some extra grace on like the first one or two exams, but I really need students to be ramping up and increasing their abilities because not only does the material get harder, I try to cover as much as we can and I want you to keep growing. But as long as you settle in on the patterns of how to study, you clearly understand the routines, print the reading, have it physically with you,
while we go through it together. Watch the video or just listen. Maybe you're somewhere that you can't watch, but you can pull up podcasts and listen. Or maybe you don't plan to do the reading while you're listening to the podcast, but you understand it better if you listen first, and then you'll go back and read it on your own after you've listened to me cover it. And then you have the annotations to show me, and you can focus maybe better. I don't know. It's just whatever works for you. But I think you really need to listen to the lectures or watch them. They're not graded in any way, but the information there is graded in other ways. I do need to see your annotations. I do need your exit tickets each week. You need 2/3 of the unit annotations done, and you'll have timed essay exams that will require, there's a lot of pressure on them because they require all this other studying. And that pressure is my way of making the work, the grading load manageable for myself while still having a really excellent class that covers a lot of material rigorously. So I'm really proud of my work as a teacher in all these lectures. And this is, what I consider my life work. I consider my students not really separate from separate in important ways of autonomy, but I consider myself responsible for them, and I consider them a blessing and a gift. And they really enrich my life. And as much as I want to help them grow and challenge them, I want to show them the things I've seen so they can avoid them or get ahead of them or not let them happen to other people. Anyway, so no AI, make sure you understand the material, make sure you understand how to do everything. I think you should know where to find everything. Right now, the syllabus quiz has things like what is the order of the units? What are the dates for the units? Because we'll cover this in the 1301 specific video. But in 1301, for example, modern philosophy ends around 1800. Mill technically is not even in modern philosophy, but I've included it in there on the syllabus quiz for 1301. So the period that ends 18, like 50 something, is Mill. But if we cover the Divinity School address in 1301, for example, like I'm not exactly sure what I would do. This is 1832, 1838. So I'm not exactly sure how I would do the dates for, there wouldn't be that dates question for like 1304 World Religions, where the units are grouped not based on dates, but more on the philosophical ideas at work in each set of readings. Okay. For your first week, you have an exit ticket that is just icebreakers. You have this video, the content video, which is like 1.5 or 0.5 and 0.6, 0.789. There may be older, like I know, for example, I have two other 1301 videos. If you're interested in those, I think I have them unlisted on YouTube right now, and they're not going to go on the podcast series, but if you want them at any point, you can ask for them. They were syllabi videos that had the content with the design. And so one issue there is that I had these really elaborate overviews of all the traditions we cover in 1301. We don't use that design anymore. So not only I wanted to separate it not only in case I change the design, I guess, but just because you want to like atomization is a problem in a lot of ways, but if it minimizes, if it allows you to not repeat work, that's why I like with the self-coded website with the templating language, it's built on Ruby, and one of Ruby's design principles is dry, do not repeat yourself, or don't repeat yourself. Yeah, I guess let me take an uncomfortable silence and see if there's anything that I've forgotten to cover. Use the Respondus practice quiz to make sure that you understand that that Respondus works properly. You can have the physical printed annotations with you, but you print the blank ones, mark them up, and then bring in your annotations to the exam. You can write out in the spaces, like at the end of a chapter or on the back of a page.
You can write out long responses that you've prepared for the guiding questions. But again, if you use AI, there will be things that I can tell about it that are off, like referencing secondary sources, the voice being a little weird. I've tried so many different ways to get students not to use AI. Like, there's not a lot of pressure on the grading. I need it in your own words, as long as you can understand the ideas. And I've really tried to help you understand the ideas. And other than that, I don't see any reason to use AI. And I have to read these. I don't want to be listening to AI. I want to be meeting my students. So thanks for understanding where I'm coming from with all this and understanding the course design. My course learning outcomes are always these. See if we can cover them very quickly. Knowledge outcomes: become familiar with fundamental philosophical concepts, become familiar with major philosophical traditions, develop the ability to critically interpret difficult philosophical texts. And then, so that's unique to philosophy. And skill outcomes: this is not unique to philosophy. Develop the ability to reason and write critically about difficult philosophical texts and issues, and develop the ability to teach themselves from source text without background knowledge. So just becoming an autodidact or somebody who can learn from primary sources, just from reading. Value outcomes: reflect critically about ethical, political, aesthetic, and metaphysical or meta-ethical issues, and reflect critically about the value of knowledge and truth. And citizenship and professionalism outcomes: develop professionalism regarding punctuality, communication, and deliverables, develop commonly agreed upon citizenship virtues and characteristics, and develop the ability to understand contradictory perspectives and harmonize stakeholders. We have holidays and breaks too. AI use is not permitted. You know, each prompt uses like 20 ounces of water, like a bottle of water. You know when the makeup dates are. You can use the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. Use Control F for like the main pages to kind of skim things. Search for like your housing rights, your renter's rights, your labor, employee rights, student rights, healthcare rights, civil rights. Know all of these things. Defend them, stand up for yourself. If you need accommodations, go through the office at your university. And students are humans, student resources and basic needs. Students are humans first. To learn effectively, you must have basic security, a roof over your head, a safe place to sleep, enough food to eat, other necessary external goods. If you or another student you know are having trouble with any of these things, of those things, please talk with me or use the campus resources available. Please allow up to 48 business hours for a response when it comes to emails and messages. I'll try to do 24. I really wish students would allow more than that, but because I'm an adjunct right now, when I'm salaried, I don't mind. I have enough classes that I have enough things to do to check my email every day. But when I just have like one or two sections or I don't have enough students, anyway. There's only been one semester where I was bad about checking it every day. For the majority of the time, I check it every morning. Actually, I do check it every morning. I check it every morning. I've been shy about responding lately, so I'm going to try to get more confident and brave. But when you need something, really let me know. Reach out early, and I will do my best to assuage your concerns. You know, after you watch this video, shoot me a message if you're worried about something. I wasn't able to address whatever. If there's something you're worried about, then I wasn't able to address it because it hasn't been brought to me yet, and I don't understand that it's a concern. But otherwise, I know that my class is tough. Maybe it's weird that you go to Instagram and podcasts, but I find that kind of self-empowering, and I encourage you to stick with the resources after the semester is over. Most of my students earn A's as long as they turn in all their work because everything else is so rigorous, they end up submitting what I expect them to submit. So by being so clear about my expectations, I'm doing that so that I get students who pass and I don't feel responsible for them not passing. I'm always proud of my students too. I'm always very happy with their work. And if I sound concerned, it's just, I don't mean to, and I'm sorry about that. I'm very glad to have you here. Welcome to class. I'm gonna cap this video. So yeah, if you think backwards in the steps of like what to do for the unit, because I think that's maybe one of the most confusing questions on the exam. The steps for how to study backwards. The last thing you'll do is take the exam in each unit. The second to last thing you'll do is submit your annotations, like the scans in the video. And then before that, you will well, you'll make sure that your answer to the guiding question is on there, but I can't remember if that's part of the scans step or the exit ticket step. But either way, before the scans step comes submitting your weekly exit ticket. And before that step comes restudying and rereading the reading after the lecture. And before that step comes, and you'll be able to see all of them at once, so you can put these in order. Before that step comes, I mean, I think you could even like have this video open and this clip of me telling you the answer while you take the quiz, because it's not locked down, unlike the other stuff. But at least you're like learning the material and listening. That's all that matters to me. Before rereading the materials, listening to lectures with the printed readings. Before listening to lectures is previewing the guiding questions to help frame the readings. Remember, those guiding questions become the exit tickets in that later step. And then the very first thing you do in any unit is print the blank readings. Print the assigned, so in normal order, print the assigned readings, preview the guiding questions, watch or listen to the lectures, redo the readings on your own where you annotate them if you didn't already do that or if you are still confused. Do not go to secondary sources. Answer the exit ticket question on your own from the primary source and the lectures without using AI. Scan and then put that answer on your printed blank reading so that you can use it during the exam. And then scan and video your annotations. Submit that. That's the second to last step. And the very last step is to take the timed essay exam. Currently, I think the parameters of how long you have and what the and how many words you need to do may change, but right now I'm pretty happy with 900 words in 60 minutes. 30 words per minute. If you know exactly what you're going to say in an hour, you can write 1800 words. So there's some a little bit of wiggle room to pause or think about what you need to figure out, but not much. And that's the last thing you do in the unit. You bring your like your marked up readings into the exam with you. Part of the steps in the lockdown security process for checking into the exam is to show your work environment and your desk. So you will like tilt the camera down and like show like at my desk right now I have this, so you'd want a clear environment. You shouldn't see anything, right? So you could also like lift up your laptop. Just do your best to show it to me. And I'll be honest with you, I don't watch these videos unless I need to. So I might skim them, I might scan them, but they're on record if I need them. I don't have the time to watch them. I don't need to invade you like that by watching them, but I do need the record. Which is just like you show up and you're there on camera, being yourself. You really understand the material. It's just like me right now. I really understand exactly how this design is supposed to function, so I just show up and explain it to you. That's it. Animals are resting. Thank you for your patience. We'll do the content-specific video next. I don't think I'm going to repurpose an old one. I'm not going to repurpose an old one. We'll do the content-specific video next. And welcome to my class. Thank you so much for being here. I'm recording this on the first day of a new semester, so I'm really excited for my new students. So, bye, guys. Thank you.
And there would be multiple lessons per unit, right? And again, you wouldn't need to know, you wouldn't have to write essays on every lesson or every reading in the unit. You just need to be able to write, you're only going to write one essay on one reading. You do not combine the essays, okay? Remember that. Do not combine the readings. Don't tell me about in here's a good example. In modern philosophy in 1301, and it can be any unit, you know. It may be in a 2000 level class, we read the same book for multiple chapters, but the prompt that I give to you is there's one prompt for chapter one, one prompt for chapter two, one prompt for chapter three. You need to respond to the actual prompt I give you. And that prompt is not going to combine with other things. You shouldn't be referencing other things. You should only reference the primary source listed under the prompt. I think with each prompt, I try to give a primary source. It's more complicated in some designs, like 1304. But usually, well, no, it's not more complicated. There are primary sources assigned and associated with each topic, with each prompt. So use those. So for like Kant, for example, there's two prompts. There's one prompt for an answer to the question, what is enlightenment? Which is a really short text. It's the one I kind of recommend in the modern period. And then there's another prompt for Grounding for the Metaphysics of Morals, where he talks about deontology and the categorical imperative. Respect, universal law, goodwill, a couple other things, the autonomy of reason, its self-actualization, misology, which is the hatred of reason because it doesn't make us happy. It's something we don't like to listen to, but we know we have to. Anyway, we cover all this in the lectures, and this is not the place for the content discussion. What is important here is that if you wrote an essay about both of Kant's assigned lectures. They're different lecture series, but if you combined both of these for the essay, it would be in the 50 territory. For like, it's not a zero, but it's like, it's not right. It didn't really break the rules, but it basically is like not following directions, not something I can grade. It's a procedural error. I need something different than that to grade it. So you also should not combine Kant, and you shouldn't contrast the grounding for the metaphysics of morals with deontology, with utilitarianism, which is a different ethical theory. So you shouldn't write a comparison paper. Like there's one prompt for each of them, and you're just tasked with representing the main argument from that essay. And then in the very last paragraph before the conclusion, I want some kind of reflection or real world change that you'd like to see either in your own life or in others' lives. Similarly, even if you reference what pragmatism means from James, you should not also reference the will to believe or any other secondary sources by the assigned authors. In Deleuze, we have two assigned texts, and they're actually both about the same topic. But the prompt comes primarily from Immanence of Life. So Zones of Immanence ends up being like the sort of backup explanation. And in the lecture, we even cover something else. Most of this is already recorded. You can see that I still have to record Nancy, or I'll just make Sartre an extra day just to, but I really want to do the Nancy recording. I've taught it in person before. Anyway. I hope you can see clearly the formula for how to take any philosophy class with me with these consistent assignments. Weekly exit tickets, which are short responses to the guiding questions. The guiding questions, which are used to frame our discussion and our reading together, also used to frame your reading, and then used to structure the essay prompt. You print the reading, follow along, mark it up on your own, scan it, submit that to me. And then, along with the short response exit tickets, you'll have on camera timed essay exams. And there's one order in which I think makes the most sense to do all of those steps. And I've covered that order multiple times in this video. So I'm just trying to be thorough. I don't want to have to record this thing again. Thank you, guys. Thanks for being my students. Bye. Really appreciate you being here. Again, if anything's unclear, just let me know. If you're confused about how to fulfill a technology requirement, let me know. Some things obviously you need, like you need the webcam, you need to be able to scan. But if you're confused about how to use the technology, I can help with that. And I'm happy to help with that. I don't prefer to talk about the ideas and philosophy, but I mean, being an online asynchronous teacher, I at this point enjoy any chance to interact with my students. So, welcome to class. Thanks for being here. I hope you enjoy it. And I hope you have patience if it takes a while. And I hope you understand my goals and why I designed my class the way I did with the things that I have assigned in it and why my assignment structure is the way that it is. I hope you understand like why the annotations and the short responses will get you ready for the essay exams. I hope you understand why all of that is studying the primary sources, these classics, a sort of classics approach or primary sources approach to doing philosophy. Cool. Thanks, guys. Bye.